When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
3, 2, 1.
When I'm working out, I love to listen to your podcast.
Whenever you say something, other people react to it.
Taking my breath.
Welcome
away.
In, everybody, to a Burn Sunday Lundquist night edition of the Air Tour Sports Podcast. Jim I'm your host, Aaron Calhoun. Torres. Hope NASCAR everybody's doing
icon,
well.
Dale
hope
Earnhardt
everybody
Jr.
had a
Kirk
great
Herbstreet
Sunday. And
phone.
How about here? This? The Final Four is officially set. That is right. Joining us in Phoenix next week, we got UConn. We got Alabama for the first time ever. Purdue for the first time since 1980. And NC State for the first time since 1983. So if you had UConn, Purdue, NC State, and Bama in your bracket fanatics bracket, well, let's just be honest, you're a freaking liar. But the Final Four is set. We are so fired up, and we're going to hit on these games from all angles. We're going to talk about Purdue today. Zach Edey goes for 40. Of course, he also shot more foul shots than Tennessee, so there is a lot to peel back. I feel like I'm the only person in the media, although I do give credit to others. Jimmy Dyke spoke up today, etc. I feel like I'm the only person in the media that will actually call this out. Purdue wins. They advance. I'm actually happy for them. Doesn't mean that there's not a big conversation there. Speaking of big conversations, how about the NC State Wolfpack? Unbelievable story. Kevin Keats, one of the good guys. DJ Burns, one of the most easily likable people that we have seen in college hoops in a while. NC State advances, and of course, UConn and Alabama on Saturday. Before we get into today's show, a couple quick announcements. First of all, BetUS. We want to thank BetUS. They have been our presenting sponsor all March long. We love working with them, and I will be on the ground in Phoenix. Probably ducking rotten tomatoes from Purdue fans, but I will be on the ground in Phoenix with BetUS, and we have so much good stuff planned for you. BetUS is taking great care of you, great care of me, great care of all of the listeners of the Aaron Torres pod. By the way, I did have NC State plus 7 today. I hope you tailed the Sunday afternoon best bet, but BetUS is incredible, and here's the best part. They have a great offer that you can still take advantage of for 3 more NCAA tournament games. We got 2 Final Four games and a national championship on Monday, and BetUS right now is offering, how about this, a 125% deposit match on your first 3 deposits. So say, hypothetically, you're not a Purdue guy. You bet against them, and you lost. They win, and they covered. Well, guess what? You deposit with BetUS. They're going to match up to 125% of what you deposit. You put in 100, they're going to give you 125. You'll lose it all on Purdue next weekend. Well, guess what? They're going to give you another 125 after that, up to your first 3 deposits, up to $2,000. Really appreciate BetUS. Best offer going. You want to help out Torres. Click the little link in the description there. Make your first deposit. Tell them Torres sent you. Really do appreciate them. Speaking of appreciate, we really appreciate Bracket Fanatics, which is now in its 4th year as our Bracket Challenge bracket sponsor, okay? And so first off, credit to the leaders of the Aaron Torres Pod Bracket Challenge as of right now, Sunday night. I don't know if the Sunday totals have been included, but as we record here on a late Sunday into Monday, the leader in the clubhouse in the Aaron Torres Pod Bracket Challenge, remember, we're giving away $1,000 in cash prizes, Game Day Metrics with 98 total points. He, like me, has UConn versus Purdue in the national championship game. Worley 360 is right behind him. Jonah, who was in first place, is now in 4th. Preston in 5th. Austin the Ag is in 6th place. Thank you to Bracket Fanatics. And here's the cool part. Here's the deal. If your bracket has been busted, Bracket Fanatics is still going to give you $250. And I'm going to tell you how to do it. Make sure to stay tuned. I will explain after we talk the Purdue-Tennessee game. But Bracket Fanatics, even if your bracket is busted, is taking care of you. We appreciate Bracket Fanatics. Again, congrats to Game Day Metrics, who coming out of Sunday is our leader in our Bracket Fanatics Challenge. So with that said, we talked Bracket Fanatics, we talked BetUS, but a Final Four is here. There is no more time to waste, so let's get to the topic of the day. And the topic of the day, as far as I am concerned, we could go in a lot of different directions. I did a live reaction to UConn beating Illinois on Saturday. We'll get to that in a minute, as well as Alabama, obviously going to their first Final Four, which we will discuss later in the show as well. We'll talk Duke, NC State. Go DJ. That's my DJ. DJ Burns was awesome as usual. But where I want to start is with the Purdue-Tennessee game. I think you could argue this was maybe the most anticipated Elite Eight game. And I would say for the most part, it largely lived up to expectations. 1-2, Big Ten regular season champ versus SEC regular season champ. I think the two leaders for the National Player of the Year in Zach Edey and Dalton connect. And we got ourselves, I'll tell you what, we got ourselves a heck of a game. As in that game, if you watched, we know how it ended. But before we get to how it ended, let's go ahead and just talk about, let's talk a little bit about the game, because it really lived up, in my opinion, to expectations. It was a game of runs early. It was a game where Tennessee jumped out to a 32-21 lead. It is a game where Purdue, to its credit, and I know people think I never give Purdue credit for anything, but they battled back. They took the lead. Then we get to halftime. Purdue is up by what? One in the, heading into the second half. And then, unfortunately, a couple things happened. One, they were actually up by two. It became a great back and forth between two of the best players in college basketball, Zach Edey, Dalton Connect. Zach Edey finishes with 40 points. Dalton Connect finishes with 36. But it was also a game that was largely marred by the refs, as Purdue finishes the game with 33 total free throws, a plus 22 free throw advantage. But ultimately, Purdue, and people aren't going to believe I'm going to say this, was the deserving winner. Purdue gets the victory. Purdue makes more plays late. Zach Edey made more plays late than Dalton Connect. And the Purdue Boilermakers are headed to their first Final Four since 1980. And so I want to break down this game. I want to talk about it from all angles. But what I want to say is what I often say on this show. In my opinion, more than one thing about this game can be true. Because obviously, if you're a Tennessee fan, you feel a certain way. If you're a Purdue fan, you feel a certain way. If you're in the middle, you know, you maybe even have a different opinion than that. But in my opinion, there is more than one thing that is true about this game as Purdue wins this game 72-66. One, I know it's going to sound crazy. I am happy for Purdue fans. Whenever a program that cares about basketball this much has waited this long with this much heartbreak, they deserve their moment. I also do think it's worth noting the refs are not the reason that Purdue won the game. Zach Edey making more plays down the stretch than Dalton Connect in the Vols is the reason that they won the game. I also do think, however, that Tennessee fans have a legitimate gripe and a legitimate reason to be mad. And I still say, I don't care if I'm on an island. I don't care if every media member in America crushes me. I know what I see. I know what everybody else sees. I know what coaches are texting me during these games. And I'm here to tell you, man, we are now 30-whatever games into the Purdue experience in 2024, and I am here to tell you definitively, the refs still have zero idea how to referee Zach Edey and Purdue. Now, first of all, I said it, and I mean it, and it sounds crazy because I've obviously gone back and forth a lot with Purdue fans over the last couple months. I'm happy for Purdue fans. Anytime that you love basketball as much as Purdue fans clearly do, you deserve this moment, and you especially deserve this moment after everything that you have been through as a program, not just this last year, but in your history of your program. I'm not going to get into all of it. It's a day to celebrate when you're Purdue. But you go back to 1994, one of my earliest college basketball memories. I remember being out to dinner with my family. I was, 9 years old? I'm an old man right now, but I was 9 years old at the time. I think it was 8, whatever. Bring it up. You find out that Duke beats Purdue in the regional final. By the way, we saw some great pictures of Tracy Wolfson and Bill Raftery where they were when they were calling that game a few nights ago. But I bring it up because Purdue has a number one seed with Glenn Big Dog Robinson, best player in college basketball, losing the Elite Eight. I guess in 2000, there was an Elite Eight loss to a conference rival that they had previously beaten. We know about the last 3 years, losing to a 13 seed in 2021, losing to a 15 seed in St. Peter's in 2022, losing to a 16 seed in 2023. So I am happy for those fans. I know they're excited. They deserve this moment. And oh, by the way, I know they are going to flood Phoenix this coming week. By the way, you know how I know? Because they're all telling me, Torres, I'm going to be there and I'm going to see you and you better not. I got some pretty wild and pseudo-inappropriate DMs for Purdue fans about what they plan on doing to me if they see me in a dark corner. But that's neither here nor there. I understand fans are, you know, whatever. But I bring it up because I am happy for them. And I will say this. Zach Edey, in my opinion, proved that he is the best player in college basketball on Sunday afternoon, okay? This was a game where I don't think the refereeing was perfect. I'll talk about it in a minute. But the idea that Zach Edey isn't special is ridiculous. And I've been fighting this since last year. When they lost to the 16 seed Fairleigh Dickinson a year ago, I remember on social media, on my podcast, I said, look, you can blame Matt Painter for not having his team prepared. You can blame the guards for not being good enough. What you cannot do is blame Zach Edey. This kid is really, really, really good. Yes, he's 7'4". Yes, there's no way to really, truly defend him. But at the end of the day, last year he was good. This year he was better. If you can't see that, I cannot help you, okay? This is a guy that can go over both shoulders. He can hit a jump hook with either hand. He's got a soft touch. He shoots 70% from the free throw line. He has shown that he can step out and hit a three-pointer. This is a guy that's got quick feet, quick hands, you know, doesn't block a ton of shots, but he alters a lot of shots. And no, I don't believe that just because of whatever, that every time something happens in the lane, he commits a foul. He is a very special player. What I will also say, he deserved to win. Purdue deserved to win this game. And he made more plays down the stretch than Dalton Knecht. I thought Dalton Knecht was tired at the end of the game. You know, he had, I think, 12, 14 points in like the first 6-7 minutes of that game, helped Tennessee get that 32 to 21 lead. But I bring it up because down the stretch, I thought Dalton Knecht was tired. There wasn't really that second guy that stepped up. You know, Josiah Jordan James had a few moments. Zakai Ziegler had a moment or two. But I mean, all you got to do is look at the box score. Tennessee scores 66 points. Dalton Knecht has 37 of them. No one else scores more than 9. Like I said, I thought Josiah Jordan James hit a few nice shots early in the game. Vescovi's dealing with the flu. And so Purdue deserves to win this game. What I'll also say, though, is I do think, and I hate to say it, but a lot of the fun that we should just be throwing roses at the feet of Purdue fans. But at the same time, we can't, because if you watch these games, they are so tough to watch. They are so exhausting. And I'll go back to what I've said from the beginning. I have never backed down from this stance. I don't care how many people tell me this. I don't care how many Purdue assistant coaches, the SIDs tweeting at me, whatever. The bottom line is you cannot watch these games and believe that they are truly refereed fairly. You just cannot tell me that. I mean, listen, I know fans get mad when you just quote stats from the box scores. And I understand that part of it is he creates a lot of mismatches, that you can't guard him one-on-one. He creates a lot of problems in the paint on defense. But let's just have an adult conversation, okay? Purdue finished this game with 33 foul shots. Tennessee finished with 11. Zach Edey finished with 17 foul shots, and Purdue finished with 11. How about this? Zach Edey drew 10 fouls before he committed a single foul, and the foul that he committed, he basically two-hand shoved somebody out of bounds. So it's like, you know, listen, I get people, oh, Torres, you just don't know ball. I mean, I had like half the national media that wants to be in Matt Painter's corner coming after me today. I don't back off of what I said. I don't think the referees know what to do with him. I've said it from the beginning. I think they are so worried about over-officiating him that they under-officiate him. And all you have to do is look at the stats. If you're a Tennessee fan, you have every right to be furious today. You have every right to be furious today. You played Purdue twice this year. And if you listen to the beginning of the segment, if you're just coming in, I know I'm talking about Tennessee's angle now. I said Purdue deserved to win. But you played Purdue twice this year. Purdue was plus 40 at the free throw line in two games. You played them in Maui. They were plus 18. It was somehow worse on Sunday. I'm sorry. That isn't strategy. You can't tell me that Tennessee was that much more physical on one end of the court and not nearly as physical on the other end. And so you can argue with me if you want. You can have all these loser national media members that want access to Matt Painter. You know, Kevin Sweeney, you know, we'll pull up his tweet here in a minute, like called Tennessee fans the village idiots for having the audacity to question him. But before we get to his tweets, like let's just call some stuff out from after the game. First of all, producer Matt, pull up Rick Barnes and what Rick Barnes had to say after this game. Rick Barnes, this is from Wes Rucker. He's covered Tennessee forever, was at the game. Rick Barnes on Zach Edey. He never leaves the paint. It's hard. Let me say this. If something happens where Rick Barnes is the nicest, most wholesome grandpa guy ever. Let me ask you this. Go into this as an unbiased person. Have you ever heard Rick Barnes say anything controversial at all? Have you ever heard him get mad about anything at all? Have you ever heard him question anything at all? Because I'll be honest, I don't think that I have. I've been covering this sport for 15 years. I don't think that, I don't think I've ever seen him mad. So for him to call out the referees about the 3 second stuff, that is insane. And that speaks to where we were on Saturday with Zach Edey. By the way, you know who happened to agree with Rick Barnes? Producer Matt, go ahead and show us what Jimmy Dykes, the ESPN broadcaster, said. He said, when Edey is allowed to be in the lane for 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 seconds, he is literally unguardable. It's just a fact. This is a point that I brought up 4 or 5 months ago, and I got killed for. And this is Jimmy Dykes. And then Jimmy Dykes, you know, I didn't have Matt pull this tweet, but Jimmy Dykes then sent a follow-up tweet where he is called a hater or whatever. And Jimmy Dykes responded by saying, there's nothing biased. It's not my style. Edey is a phenomenal player. Just saying what I've observed and what coaches have told who have played against him in the past 2 years have told me. Listen, I came on this show 4 or 5 months ago in December, and we talked about this. I said, when I went on my Zach Edey crusade 4, 5, 6 months ago in December, and I was getting killed and nobody was watching college basketball and I had no defense, you know, the only people that came to my defense, college basketball coaches. I had a lot of texts, not, you know, 30, but it was more than one or two. Some of them were just like, Torres, you're dead ass right. Torres, we love you. Torres, keep fighting the fight. I had one coach who played against him at one point in the season say like, look, the way they refer him, you can't beat him. You just can't beat him. And this was a good coach of a good team. Remember, they played everybody in the preseason, Gonzaga, Tennessee, Arizona, Alabama, whoever. I had somebody from their coaching staff, like, we're one of the top five talented teams in America. If they referee him like that, we can't beat him. So I'm not saying, and this was the thing that got misconstrued last time of like, oh, Torres, is every game supposed to have even number of fouls? No. But when you're plus 40 in two games, when you draw 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 fouls on one end and commit one on the other, it makes no sense. By the way, I didn't even mention, producer Matt, pull up the Nate Oates quote from when they played Alabama in December. This is what Nate Oates said back in December. He said, Zach Edey had 3 fouls. Our front court had 14 fouls, I think. Wagu and Pringle both fouled out. Grant Nelson and Jaron Stevenson had 2 each. He's obviously hard to guard. When it's officiated the way it was officiated, he's almost impossible. So listen, I want to continue. I want to talk about the other 3 games. I want to talk about UConn. I want to talk about NC State. But when you have other coaches who have coached against him who are like, if you're going to referee him like this, there's nothing we can do. When Rick Barnes, the least controversial human being in the history of human beings, is just saying like, what are we supposed to do? I can't be the crazy one. I can't be the only one. Congrats to Purdue. They deserve this moment. They really do. I know it sounds like I'm crapping on them. I'm not. By the way, Zach Edey was my national player of the year. I picked UConn Purdue in the national championship game. So I know that they're great. I know that to Matt Painter's credit, you know what Matt Painter's greatest gift is that he did? He recruited a bunch of shooters around him, and the guys around him now hit, you know, you look at the team that they have, you know, whether it's Braden Smith, whether it's Lance Jones, whether it's whoever, that's really what makes them essentially impossible. It's not just Zach Edey. It's that when you look at the guys around them, on the season, Purdue is a 41% three-point shooting team. Braden Smith shoots 44%. Fletcher Lawyer shoots 45%. Mason Gillis shoots 48%. So you try to double-triple team. The point I'm trying to make is that this isn't a knock on him, but we have to have an honest conversation. And I feel like I am the only one that is willing to have an honest conversation. So that is that. Congrats to Purdue. First Final Four since 1980. I am happy for Purdue fans. I'll see a lot of you there. I'll bring security, I guess, because I there's nothing else to say. Congrats to Purdue fans. Tell you what, producer Matt, why don't we get a quick word from our partners? We'll come back. By the way, I'm going to tell you how you can win $250 even if your bracket is busted. We'll come back. We'll also talk the other three games. My guy, DJ Burns. Go, DJ. That's my DJ. We'll talk UConn. We'll talk Bama. We'll talk about everything else from the weekend.
America's favorite sportsbook and casino. Live betting and racebook. We're celebrating 30 years with a historic offer. A 125% sign-up bonus on your first three deposits. Plus, 10% gambler's insurance. Get started today. BetUS, where the game begins.
All right, everybody. I'm back. Good to be back. Good to be back. So, first of all, thank you to BetUS. Before we get to the rest of the weekend's games, did mention that even if you've signed up for the Aaron Torres Pod Bracket Challenge with Bracket Fanatics, we've been working with them for 4 years, and they are giving away $1,000 in cash prizes this March. Here's the thing. I know a lot of you had Kentucky in the Final Four, UNC in the Final Four, Arizona in the Final Four, and a lot of your brackets are busted. Well, here is the cool part, is that Bracket Fanatics is giving away $250 to somebody in the Aaron Torres Pod Bracket Challenge. Even if your bracket is busted, let me explain how. So here is the deal. In a moment, I am going to be sending out my best bet for the weekend. Bracket Fanatics will then give out $5 bracket bucks. It's free money that they are giving you. It's all in Bracket Fanatics. It will be in your account Monday morning, okay? And all you have to do is basically you'll have 500 bracket bucks in your account. All you have to do is log in and manage bets. You'll see a manage bets tab. And there you can either take my bet or you can bet against me. And so once you accept my bet, then we're competing against each other. And here is the cool part. You can also bet against your friends. So say you're on the same side as Torres, but your buddy John is in the bracket, is in the tournament. You can say, hey, John, I'm going to bet you 50 bracket bucks. These are free. This is free money that Bracket Fanatics is giving you, okay? And then you can bet back and forth, go back and forth, this and that. You can make bets with your friends or you can compete against me. So the bet I'm going to make, and you will have the opportunity to bet against me, bet with me, come Monday morning. That bet is this. I'm taking Purdue and the points. That's right. My Purdue Boilermakers, after I just spent all this time crushing the Purdue Boilermakers, I think it's a bad matchup with NC State. We'll talk about NC State here in a minute. I don't want to diminish this moment for NC State fans. But I bring it up because this coming weekend, those two teams will play in Phoenix. And you look at how the game is broken down. BetUS currently has Purdue as a 9.5-point favorite. I think Purdue wins. I think Purdue covers. So what we'll do, I'll send you a bet. I'm going to take Purdue minus 9.5. You can, if you accept the bet, you'll take NC State plus 9.5. If they cover the 9.5, if they win outright, you're going to win a bunch of bracket bucks. Then we'll do a bet before the national championship game. Why do I bring all that up? It is because whoever has the most bracket bucks, remember, use some of those bracket bucks to bet against your friends. Bet against your friends. Whoever has the most bracket bucks at the end of the NCAA tournament, you will get $250 in real cash from Bracket Fanatics. So all you got to do, manage bets, accept the bet, make bets with your friends. You can send me bets of your own. But whoever has the most bracket bucks at the end of the tournament wins $250. And cash prize. Yeah, any questions, feel free to email me at AaronTorresPodcastQuestions@gmail.com. But I appreciate Bracket Fanatics and I appreciate their support. With that said, let's switch gears and let's go ahead and talk about the rest of the weekend in college hoops. And let's start with the big game on Sunday. So Sunday, the second game was interesting. Listen, it was weird because I do think that the first game, Tennessee-Purdue, everyone had an opinion on it, an opinion on Zach Edey, an opinion on this, an opinion on that. I think most everybody, tell me if I'm wrong in the YouTube comment section, but I feel like most everybody had the same opinion on the late game as each other. Like, I don't think there was a lot of like raging, unique opinions about the late game. I believe that, in my opinion, it felt like everybody felt like, okay, NC State, they're a great story. We're happy for them. It's a cool story. Started out in the ACC tournament, but even after beating Marquette, it's like, okay, well, Marquette, you know, we know how Marquette goes. Marquette, you know, Shaka has bad moments in the NCAA tournament, but there's no way that NC State is beating Duke. One, the refs aren't going to allow it. Two, they're ACC rivals. And three, I thought this was kind of an important part, is that they just played in the ACC tournament. And part of the reason that NC State was even in the NCAA tournament is because of the fact that they beat Duke in the quarterfinals. And so you look at Duke. They're starting to play good basketball. Listen, I'm not going to lie. They got a little bit lucky against Houston, Jamal Shedd going down. But they're still playing good basketball. And I just felt like the motivation of losing in the ACC tournament was going to be too much. And because of it, I thought Duke was going to go ahead and win that game. Well, for about a half, I was right. By the way, my best bet was NC State plus 7.5. So, you know, I can't sit here and lie and say I thought they were going to get blown out. But I bring it up because first half kind of going to plan. 27-21 at the half. Then the second half starts, and it starts to get a little weird. And all of a sudden, Duke can't make shots. And all of a sudden, they're in a three-minute scoring drought. And all of a sudden, NC State has the lead. And all of a sudden, they're in another three-minute scoring drought. And then, how about this? Did you see this part? When Kevin Keats got the technical foul for being out of the coach's box. Again, I mentioned that Rick Barnes is like the nicest human ever. Kevin Keats is as good of a dude as anyone you will ever meet. And when I saw Keats got a tech, I was doing Fox Sports Radio. I was like, what did he get a tech for? He's not yelling. He's not screaming. He's not that kind of coach. And so he gets the out of the box tech. NC State's up six. And you're like, oh my God, Duke's going to make a run. This is how they're going to win the game. Well, of course they don't. And there's one big reason why they did not. It's because NC State's awesome. And it's because NC State has a dude named DJ Burns who just went bananas in this game. DJ Burns, I think, listen, DJ Burns and NC State, in my opinion, are everything that is great about this story, about this tournament, okay? We're going to get to NC State's path in a minute, but let's just start with DJ Burns. Lefty, bigger guy, you know, and that's not a disrespect. It's just a fact. But this is a guy that, you know, started his career at Winthrop, ends up at NC State the last 2 years. He's 6'9", 275, and all this dude does is get buckets and drop dimes. Finish this game. Imagine this. Like this is what makes the tournament so great. You have a guy. You have a Duke team with how many McDonald's All-Americans? Mark Mitchell, I believe, was a McDonald's All-American. Filipowski definitely was. Tyrese Proctor was a five-star recruit who played overseas. Jaron McCain, McDonald's All-American. Jeremy Roach, McDonald's All-American. Sean Stewart, McDonald's All-American. TJ Power, top 25 prospect. So basically, your top seven or eight guys were all either McDonald's All-Americans, five stars, top 25 prospects. And it's a dude who began his career at Winthrop who dominated the second half of an Elite Eight game. DJ Burns finishes with 29 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 blocks, and NC State is headed to their first Final Four since the 1983 Jimmy Valvano run. First off, listen, I'm not enough of a historian from the early 80s, Jim Valvano days. I would have to imagine this is as crazy as that run back in that day, and here's why. It's not just that NC State had to win the ACC tournament to get here. NC State had to win 5 games. They were so bad, they had to play on Tuesday of the ACC tournament. I remember producer Matt and I were getting ready to go to Vegas. I wasn't even watching those games. I'm like, I'm not watching this. I'm not watching Louisville. I'm not watching Georgia Tech. I'm going to be watching nonstop basketball for the next 4 weeks. Why would I possibly watch that game? And so all of a sudden, they win that game. Then, like I said, they beat Duke on that Thursday, and it feels kind of weird. And then they beat Virginia, but it's Virginia, and what does that really mean? Then they beat North Carolina, and it's interesting. But it's like there's no way they can possibly keep this going. And then they get to the tournament, and you can just see them starting to get more confident every single game, starting to believe more every single game. I saw DJ Horn after the ACC tournament. He said, why not us? Then all of a sudden, you beat Texas Tech. Then you get Oakland in the second round. And listen, this is part of the tournament, right? It was funny. I was doing radio on Saturday, on Sunday with my buddy Dan Beyer on Fox Sports Radio. And it was funny because Dan opened the show by talking about how advantageous Duke's path was. How Duke got, and by the way, Dan's 100% right, but how Duke got a 13 seed in round one, then a 12 seed in James Madison in round two. Then you play Purdue, but Jamal Shedd gets hurt. And now you're playing an ACC rival who you just lost to. It doesn't get any more easier than that. But NC State, to its credit, they got in the tournament and they got some breaks. They play Oakland in round two. Remember, Oakland couldn't get a shot off at the buzzer to win that game. They play in the Sweet 16. You could just see they were the better team than Marquette. There was nothing fluky about that. And so to beat Marquette, to beat Duke, when you're clearly the better team, Duke has a chip on its shoulder from losing to you in the ACC tournament. This is just an incredible story. And the five wins in 5 days continues. I joked. UConn in 2011 was the first team to ever win five games in their conference tournament. And that they went on to win the national championship with Kemba Walker. And I remember sitting there saying, and I joked, I said, now NC State's in the Final Four. Clearly the secret to making a deep run in the NCAA tournament for all you schools that can't do it, you got to be bad enough to play on the Tuesday of your conference tournament, because that's what UConn did in 11. That's what NC State did in 2024. But it's wild because obviously they wouldn't be here. And I want to get back to the NC State perspective, but you know what this proves to me beyond a reasonable doubt? This is actually the best argument possible why you shouldn't expand the tournament. And it's funny because I think Greg Sankey and the powers that be are going to use this as proof. Well, I mean, if NC State was the 14th seed in the ACC, there's no doubt that they should have been. We need more power conference teams. I would say the counter. Greg Sankey's argument, and these are his own words, the words that Greg Sankey likes to use, the word specifically, is access. He said some of these schools need more access to the tournament. Well, I can tell you there is literally no postseason in America that provides more access to more teams than college basketball. There are 300 whatever teams in the NCAA Division I. And basically, every single one has access to the NCAA tournament. You just got to go to your conference tournament and win. Now, some teams, they're not eligible for the tournament because of NCAA stuff, or they're, you know, that four-year window isn't open yet. Chicago State, shout out Chicago State, isn't in a conference. But everybody has access to the postseason. You just got to do it. And NC State did do it, and now they are in the Final Four. It is unbelievable to think about. Beyond that, a couple other thoughts. I think Kevin Keats is one of the great stories. I mentioned this earlier. We've had Kevin Keats on this show a couple times. Just one of the good guys. I mean, it's just, he's a nice guy. And I know everybody, in the, oh, you know, you know, whatever. It's like, hey, he's a nice guy. But one thing about me, I won't not criticize a guy, even if I think he's a nice guy. And it wasn't going well going into that ACC tournament. Like, you know, again, this is the difference between me and all these guys defending Purdue that won't say anything negative about him. I'll call it out. I think Keats is a great guy. I think if he had lost to Louisville on the first day of the ACC tournament, there was a real conversation about whether he's coming back or not. Well, he wins the ACC, gets a two-year rollover, and now he's going to a Final Four. It's unbelievable. I'm so happy for him. And I'll tell you this, you know who else I'm happy for? NC State fans, because the combination of what I just said with Keats, but also NC, you know, NC State is kind of one of those, everyone talks about the bad luck of, I hate to say it, but Tennessee fans or Texas A&M fans, you know, hate to do it, Producer Matt, Auburn fans. Producer Matt went to Auburn, but I bring it up because there's a lot of fan bases that think they've had a lot of bad luck. I would put NC State up there with anybody, okay? Remember, first of all, 2018, they were the first team left out of the NCAA tournament. 2020, I think it was 2019, they were the first team left out of the NCAA tournament. 2020, they would have made it, but got canceled because of COVID. Now, all of a sudden, you're talking about, well, Kevin Keats hasn't made the tournament in this many years. It's like, well, he was the first team left out, would have made it in 2020, whatever. 2021, I remember this vividly. It was the COVID year. Everything's in a bubble. NC State finished that season with, they had like six or seven season-ending injuries. I think the tallest player they had left was like 6'5" or 6'6". So they're going to play Duke and, you know, Carolina and whoever, and their tallest guy is like 6'5". It was unbelievable. And so you take in all that. NC State fans, I hate to pour on here, but that 2021 College World Series, remember that? Where NC State makes it to the championship game, and then the COVID rules, this is when we were still testing for COVID, they change, and all of a sudden, like, NC State's entire starting lineup is out the day of the game, and it basically cost them the College World Series. You know, major injuries. There was that one year, and I know he wasn't very good this past year, but Devin Leary was coming back and he's, you know, people were talking about him as a Heisman contender. Remember, he had 34 touchdowns, his second to last year at NC State, decides to come back, play college football at NC State, and gets hurt like the third game. And so, excuse me, I got to just adjust my seat here, but I just bring it up because I don't think there is a program in America that has dealt with more crap unfair than NC State. I'm happy for him. And I'll say this, you know, I'll say this is that, you know, you talk about the Final Four that we're about to have. I truly believe, like, you sit there and think about this past year, okay? Last year, everyone complained about the Final Four. If you remember, it was like the lowest combined seeds ever. UConn, even that won it, was a four seed. San Diego State, Florida Atlantic, and Miami was the other one. But I bring it up because going in, it was like ticket sales were at an all-time low. This, that, the other thing. Well, this year, think about it. UConn's going back, and I am here to tell you, we're going to talk UConn in a minute. I promise you, UConn is going to have an insane number of fans because I think there was an insane number of UConn fans that quietly felt very good and purchased tickets probably weeks and months ago. I know because I talked to a lot of them, but Purdue fans are going to fill that place up. And obviously, look, Alabama fans, their first ever Final Four. And of course, NC State is a huge basketball brand. I don't think people understand. Like I said that on Twitter, NC State's not a big brand. Go to that tri-state, the triangle area. People love their Wolfpack basketball. They just haven't had a lot of reason to be excited. So I cannot wait to get to Phoenix. I cannot wait to see all the fans in that city. And I'm here to tell you, Saturday night in Glendale is going to be electric. Really quickly, I'm going to take a quick sip of water here. Forgive me. I want to get to the Saturday games. And I did a UConn reaction immediately following the game on Saturday. So forgive me if some of this is repetitive. But what UConn did to Illinois was one of the wildest things that I have ever seen. By the way, as we were recording, got a text from our guy, Hassan Diarra. Hassan Diarra will join us this week. And you talk about a guy that we are going to have a lot to talk about. Hassan freaking Diarra was a stud on Saturday. Okay, so if you watch the game, you know what I'm talking about. But the bottom line is this. That first half was tough to watch. And of course, all the old takes about how college basketball is terrible, the product's never been worse, blah, 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 this and that, they were coming out. Because it was 23-23 late in the first half. And bluntly, there were three guys that showed up ready to play for UConn. Donovan Clingan was incredible. We'll talk about him in a minute. Then it was Hassan Diarra, stud, who was awesome. You know, Hassan, our guy Hassan, basically carried UConn in that first half, okay? You know, you look at the stat sheet because of how the game ended, it doesn't overwhelm you. But he really hit two or three threes that were really the difference in UConn building a lead. And I thought on top of him, you know, again, Hassan with 11 points off the bench, as well as three rebounds and two assists, Samson Johnson played very well. But going into half, you know what the stats were. UConn was 1 of 12 from three. UConn, how about this? The stat was UConn was 1 of 18. 1 of 18. Starters not named Donovan Clingan from the field. And I tweeted this at the time, and I mean it. Think about what this first half was for UConn. Tristan Newton, All-American. I would argue played the worst half of his career. This guy who averages 15 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists. He had 4 points at halftime. Cam Spencer, Mr. Reliable, always shows up. And I'm not saying he didn't show up. 14 points per game. Shoots one of the best 3-point shooters in America. 4 points. So your two leading scorers who average 29 a game have 8 at the half. And I would argue the two were individually the worst half that each player played. Then you have Steph Castle, a future lottery pick, 0 points at the half. Alex Caraban, 0 points at the half. So 4 of your 5 starters, I would argue a minimum of 3, maybe all 4 will play in the NBA. 3 might be drafted this year, taking out Donovan Clingan. Of those guys, you had a combined 8 points and you were up 28-23 at the half. And I said, this is actually the best scenario for UConn. And so I bring it up because UConn goes into the half and you're like, okay, I think they're okay. I think they're okay. I think they're okay. But I'll be honest, I did not think we were going to get what we got in the second half. It was funny. I was sitting there. I was in one room. My wife was in the other. She goes, how's UConn doing? I said, they're up 5, but they're not really playing well. And it seemed like snap of a finger, it was like, oh, honey, they're up 30. And that is right, a 30-0 run for UConn late in the first half into the second half. It was surreal. It was one of the most amazing things that I have ever seen. And my reaction was bluntly pretty much what all of your reactions were. I've never seen anything like this. You know, the stat that I saw, this was UConn's first 30-0 run of any kind since they played New Hampshire in 1990. Okay, so New Hampshire, 1990. I don't think it has ever happened in an NCAA tournament game. I could stand corrected on that. They were trending to become the first team since the 1992 Elite Eight to win a game by 30 in the Elite Eight. Now, they let their foot off the gas. But you're talking about a 30-0 run. And you talk about a scenario where UConn goes on a 30-0 run. They take their foot off the gas. How about this? They had pulled their starters with 4 minutes left in a game in which they were up by 5 at the half. That shows you how dominant this team is. And let me say a couple things. First off, Donovan Klingon was unbelievable. And we had a comment in the comment section to start the show. It was really good. I'll just read it now. It was from Cheesy Skull. Shout out Cheesy Skull. He or she said, this tournament has shown you need a dominant big to go all the way. Well, I can't speak to go all the way. We'll find out. I mean, you know, ultimately, the only team that doesn't have a dominant big is obviously Alabama. But Donovan Klingon was the difference in this game. And a couple things. One, he was unbelievable. 22 points, 10 boards, 5 blocks. I don't believe he only had 5 blocks. It felt like he had about 15. And if he didn't have 15, he definitely altered at least 8, 10, 12 shots. But what was also interesting was that Brad Underwood just got killed for the game plan. Because if you heard him before the game in the Friday media availability, did you see what he said? He said, listen, we respect Dan Hurley. John Fanta tweeted out the quote. He said, you know, listen, we respect Dan Hurley. We respect that program. But they're nothing we haven't seen in the Big Ten this year. Yeah, Brad, I'm sorry, buddy. Think you probably got to take an L on that. But then also, let me also say this. I just thought the game plan was terrible. And it's funny, right? Because a lot of times on social media, when everyone agrees on something, I'm usually the guy that pushes back. I'm like, I don't know if everyone's right on this. The game plan was not ideal, though. Because if you watch the game, what was clear early, and I don't know that I blame Brad Underwood, but the game plan was get Donovan Klingon out of this game and try to get him in foul trouble. And so they just kept going at him. And they got a foul on him early, about 2-3 minutes in the game. But then they kept going at him, kept going at him, kept going at him. And then you're like, Coach, I think you need to adjust the game plan. All he does is keep swatting your crap. And every time he swatted it, it led to a layup on the other end. So I don't think it was a great game plan for Brad Underwood. Donovan Klingon was the star of the game. But finally, let me give my big takeaway from this game. And this is something I did the long form video on Saturday. And so you can go back and look at that one. I think with this win, UConn is officially, I mean, they're the program that everybody wants to be, right? Now, you still have to have 2 more wins to close things out and win a second straight national championship. You do that, it's immortality. It'll be UConn's 6th national championship if they're good enough to win. And I'm not giving credit to Alabama or Purdue or NC State that could possibly pull the upset. Seeing too many teams that we say are unbeatable that get beaten. And you know who they are. I won't repeat it. I'm not sold that this is 100% the UConn invitation, not with the way Purdue played today, et cetera. 2, what I would say about UConn, though, if they close it out, and even if they don't, this program is just operating at such a high level right now. And I give Dan Hurley so much freaking credit. Because I remember asking him about this at the Final Four last year. Is that, you know, last year UConn makes the Final Four. They beat Gonzaga in the Elite Eight, 30-point win in that game. And, you know, I saw a lot on social media about, oh, you know, this is UConn. It's what they're supposed to do. They go to Final Fours. And it's like, Dan Hurley took over a really bad situation. UConn was coming off back-to-back losing seasons. They had a third straight losing season his first year. And what's crazy about it, and this was something he talked about, he said, this was really bad. And we took over in 2017 or 2018 or whatever it was. There was no transfer portal. You couldn't just kick 11 guys to the curb and bring 11 new guys in. That's not how it works. So we had to build through freshmen. We had to take our lumps. We ended up in the AC in the Big East, and we had to take it on the chin there for a year or two. And so then to get to this point where you're going to back-to-back Final Fours for the first time in school history, where you've already set an individual school record for wins with 35, where you won your first Big East tournament since 2011, your first Big East regular season championship since 2006, your first Big East regular season outright championship since 1999. It is insane, and I'm not trying to get ahead of myself, but I don't see it slowing down, because what Dan Hurley has done is he is one of the rare guys that has figured out how to build a culture in this era. One, his eye for talent, his ability to identify is next level. It is literally unprecedented. We talked about it on Saturday. But you go through some of these guys. Donovan Klingon was a fringe top 50 recruit, according to 24/7 Sports. He's going to be a top 15 pick. Steph Castle, yes, he was a McDonald's All-American. He was a fringe top 30 recruit when he committed to UConn. Got better, ends up as a McDonald's All-American. Tristan Newton, anybody could have had him out of the portal. UConn got him. Alex Caraban was a fringe top 100 recruit. And so I bring it up because Dan Hurley's eye for talent, but an ability to develop them in the program. It's just, I've been saying this for weeks, and I think it came to fruition in that Illinois game for all to see. Just operating at such a high level. Recruiting at a high level, developing at a high level, and then game day at a high level. When you play the Big Ten tournament champions, when you play a team that was killing everybody for a stretch there, when you play an All-American in Terrence Shannon Jr., who was averaging like 36, 37 points per game over his previous 4 or 5 game, maybe it was like 33, but you get the point. And it is complete domination. Best program in college basketball right now. Second straight Final Four. Again, I know you have to obviously close this thing out with a second straight national championship, but they are operating at such an insanely high level. And listen, like I said, they're the envy of every college basketball program. I had Louisville fans hitting me up. I had Kentucky fans hitting me up. I had whoever. Like, you are so lucky. And the one thing I will tell you, UConn fans, do not take this for granted. I don't think most UConn fans are. It's not supposed to look like this. It's not supposed to be this good. We have at UConn potentially another dynasty on our hands, but I just think we have the right coach. And you know, you can't speak to getting the right coach in his prime and knowing your program is in good hands for the foreseeable future. Speaking of which, let's go to that last game, because you talk about a program that is in good hands going forward. I've said it for weeks. I'll say it again. If I was starting a college basketball program today, not talking about, it's not a lifetime achievement award, not what you've done over the last 30 years, taking age, ability, coaching, talent, this, that, the other thing. I say Dan Hurley is my number one choice. Nate Oates is my number two choice. And Nate Oates and Alabama, how about the Crimson Tide going to their first Final Four in program history with the 89-82 win over Clemson? And what I would say about this is a couple things. Is one, I've said it for weeks, this is Nate Oates' best coaching job. Because you look at this roster compared to previous rosters. 2021, he wins the SEC. He's got Herb Jones. SEC Player of the Year, balling in the NBA. 2023, he's got Brandon Miller. SEC Player of the Year, number two overall pick, balling in the NBA. This year, he had to scramble last offseason. It was funny. I asked him about this at West Regional Media Availability. But if you remember, Alabama fans will remember this. Alabama lost all three assistant coaches to head coaching jobs last offseason. And I asked him, I said, Coach, what was your April like last year putting together this roster? He said, I'm thrilled for all my guys that had a chance to get another head coaching job. But damn, do I wish that it didn't all happen at once. And so I bring it up because you look at this roster. Alabama's three best players started their careers at Ohio Mark Sears, at St. Peter's Aaron Estrada played at Hofstra for a good stretch, and Grant Nelson began his career at North Dakota State. None of these guys were five stars. I don't think any of them are surefire NBA players. And Nate Oates has Alabama in the Final Four. It is unbelievable, and I think it speaks to him. I will tell you this, the most impressive part about Alabama's run, as I mentioned, I was at the media availability on Wednesday for Alabama. And I bring it up because I have on this show all year talked about, you know, it's a rebuilding year. Wait till next year. They could bring everybody back. And you know what Nate Oates opened his press conference by saying? He said, look, we're happy to be here. Happy to be in Los Angeles. This is our third Sweet 16 in 4 years. There's only three other programs that can say it. I think Houston, Gonzaga, and Creighton are the only programs outside of Alabama that have been to three Sweet 16s in the last 4 years. But he said, we got to get to a Final Four here. But he said, we need to get to a Final Four. That is the next step. We're happy to be here, but we've been here already. And I'll be honest, that kind of stunned me because I've been sitting here all year saying, this is a rebuilding year. Wait till next year. I kind of thought Nate Oates was kind of that Bill Self. I've been thinking about next year for a month now. Bill Self may have been. Nate Oates hasn't been. And so for him to go into this game and beat Clemson 89-82 was absolutely unbelievable. Listen, the game is 24 hours old. There isn't a ton of new stuff to really peel back. But a couple thoughts here. One, I had a buddy at the game. Said Mark Sears is playing as well as any guard in college basketball. He's a coach. 23 points, 7 three-pointers for Mark Sears. But it was really just a consistent effort, right? 13 points from Ryland Griffin. Ryland Griffin's one of the unsung guys, four-star kid from Dallas, typical kid, played a little bit as a freshman, could have transferred out, could have looked for somewhere better, has maybe his best game as an Alabama basketball player in the biggest game to send them to the Final Four. 10 points for Aaron Estrada, 19 points for Jaren Stevenson off the bench. Did you see, by the way, Jaren Stevenson last year was a five-star player in the class of 2024, decides to reclassify. He's from Chapel Hill. Chooses Alabama over North Carolina after they beat North Carolina Sweet 16. Did you see the video from the Alabama locker room where Nate Oates said, "Hey, Jaren, guess what? They don't got practice at Alabama, they don't got practice in Chapel Hill tomorrow, and we do. I'm fired up for you." Well, Jaren Stevenson, man, this was the game where it's like, okay, we now see why he is a five-star. 19 points, 5 of 8 from three. But it was just a team win and a team effort. I wish I had some new amazing take on Alabama, but I just think Nate Oates is completely overachieved. And I think what I said, and what I said on Saturday night, and I truly mean this, I believe Alabama is a burgeoning basketball power. Think about Nate Oates, 5 years at the school. This is his fifth year. 2020 tournament is canceled. Since then, has twice won the SEC regular season. Has twice won the SEC tournament. That's something John Calipari can't say he's won any of them. Rick Barnes has won what? Rick Barnes has won one tournament, one regular season. But the point I'm trying to make, not many people can say they've won four combined in the last five seasons, okay? Been to a Sweet 16 in 2021. Been to a Sweet 16 in 2023. Now you're going to the Final Four with maybe your least talented team. Lastly, I'll say this. I think Alabama's got a shot against UConn. I'm really not trying to be, fatalistic UConn guy, and I'm not trying to create a narrative. But when you can hit 16 of 36 threes like they did against Clemson, you can beat anybody in college basketball. When you can put up 89 points because you hit 16 threes, you can beat anybody in college basketball. And the crazy thing about UConn is this. Remember, UConn's only lost one game in 2024, which is a crazy stat in and of itself. It was at Creighton Tuesday night. I remember we talked about it on this show afterward. UConn gave up 14 three-pointers to Creighton. I think that's the blueprint. I think you have to be able to hit a lot of three-pointers. You have to be able to hit them in volume, and it can't be a fluky thing. You can't be a 27% three-point shooting team, start 8 of 9. That's not sustainable. What Alabama does, though, Alabama is sustainable. So I will be fascinated to see. We're going to preview the games. We got all week to preview the games. But I'll tell you this. I think Alabama's got a puncher's chance. There's obviously some cool ties between the Hurley family and Nate Oates. Remember, Bobby Hurley at Buffalo hired Nate Oates as a high school basketball coach. Dan Hurley recruited Nate Oates' best player, E.C. Matthews, at Romulus High School. Very, very, very cool story. Alabama headed to its first Final Four. Couple things. Apparently, my computer's not plugged in, so I only got 20% battery left. So, with that said, let's get to some questions here before we get out of here. Drop any questions in the YouTube chat. Great chat for a Friday night. Been waiting 41 years for another Final Four, says One Man Wolfpack. You deserve this, man. Listen, NC State, like I said, is one of the great story. They've been through a lot. You Wolfpack fans have been through a lot. I know I already mentioned it. I'm not going to go through it again, but 2018, first team left out of the 2019, first team left out of the tournament. And it was one of those, like, every metric said you should be in. 2020, you would have been in. you know, the College World Series, like some of the football stuff. It's like, it's just one thing after another for NC State fans. You deserve it. First time in 41 years for NC State. Unbelievable. Sean says NC State has been unbelievable to run their on. It's hard not to root for them. It's hard not to root for them because, and it's funny, right? Because they're a power conference team. And so you sit there and you say, should we be rooting for a team that lost 14 times and finished whatever, 14th in the ACC? Yes, you should. Because why it's cool, they just have a lot of likable personalities. DJ Horn is fearless. DJ Burns is probably the face of this NCAA tournament right now, along with Zach Edey, along with maybe Dan Hurley, whatever. But I mean, DJ Burns going for 29 points, 6'8 center. You know, like, I'm not trying to be a jerk, but that's probably not an NBA player. If we're talking about Zach Edey might not make it in the NBA, DJ Burns is not an NBA player. But for 3 weeks in March, he has dominated. It is such a cool story. They're such a good group. Kevin Keats is a great guy. I think they're easy to root for. We'll see how they handle Purdue because that is going to be a load for them. A couple more, we'll get out of here. What does today's loss mean for Duke? I don't think anything. It was funny. I saw, as soon as the game went final, I saw Cooper Flagg was trending on Twitter. Cooper Flagg, of course, is the number one high school prospect in America. He's committed to Duke, over UConn. And it was a lot of Cooper Flagg, come save us. You know, UMFers are cooked next year when Cooper Flagg comes in, UConn or Duke's bringing in a great recruiting class. I actually, listen, I know it's not cool to credit Duke. I didn't think they were that good this year. And I think John Shire, to get to an Elite Eight in year two, I know he took over a great situation from Coach K. I'm not trying to sit here and say they were some poverty program and it's the greatest rebuilding job in the history of college basketball. But at the same time, to get to the Elite Eight, even if you caught some breaks, I think they got the right guy, and he's recruiting at an elite level. He's going to have the number one pick in the draft next year. By the way, the kid from Africa, I apologize that I don't know how to pronounce his name, and I don't want to embarrass him or say the wrong thing. That kid's a top 10 pick, the 7-foot center from Africa. So it's like you start to look around. One or two of these guards could come back. Remember, Jeremy Roach has another year of eligibility. Is Jared McCain going to go in the first round? Does Tyrese Proctor come back? Got a few guards coming in as well. I don't think this means much for Duke. I just think, listen, you know, only one team's going to get to hoist that trophy. But I do think, by the way, I do think it's one that does sit a little bit unwell because that's a team that you beat in the regular season. That's a team that knocked you out of the ACC tournament. And I think Duke fans felt pretty good going into this game. So I do think it obviously sucks for Duke fans. And I think you got to be frustrated that things didn't go better for you today. All right. John Davis says, never seen a 30-0 run before. That's in reference to UConn. Seems like Duke went on a 20-0 run versus Michigan in 1992 final. We'll get our stats and research team on that one. I am not aware of a run. I mean, obviously, you know, that 92 final against the Fab Five is kind of infamous, right? It was that, I believe that was the 92 Final Four. Coach K faced Bobby Knight, and Bobby Knight kind of blew past him in the handshake line, and their relationship was never the same after that. Duke then, of course, goes on to play Michigan in the national championship game, the Fab Five. Fab Five a year later, that was a Chris Webber thing. John, I'm sorry if that's true. I just don't remember it. I've never seen a 30-0 run in a game of that magnitude. It just shows you like I mean, if UConn can do that against Illinois, they can do it against pretty much anybody. So credit to them. Let's keep going. A couple more before we get out of here. We got anything else? Casey, who says, I'm the baddest MF-er to ever host a podcast. Great. This is actually a great question. Does Purdue have a realistic chance to win, or will UConn's guards be the difference maker? I think Purdue has a realistic chance. I really do. And I'm not trying to be UConn guy that doesn't want to give my team credit. I think Zach Edey creates real problems in the post because, as I said, all those guys around him shoot 40%+ from three. They're a 41% three-point shooting team. So again, if you double Zach Edey, then you got to kick out, and what do you do, and how do you do it, and all that good stuff. It's like, you can't guard everybody if you're going to double team Edey. Now, Klingon, in theory, is maybe the only guy that can go one-on-one, but UConn does not have a ton of front court depth. They play Klingon. Obviously, Caraban is a four that's about 6'9", 6'10", and then Samson Johnson. But Samson Johnson's a skinny guy. And I'm telling you, I think Purdue can win that game. Listen, I know how I opened the show. I know we talked a lot about Purdue. But as much as I think the refs are confused and whatever, like, they're a really good team. You don't get to this point without being a really, really, really good team. Credit to Purdue. And yes, to answer Casey's question, I absolutely believe that, yes, if we get a Purdue-UConn national championship game, which I do think, then yes, I actually think that Purdue can win that game. I'll say this. This might be a wild take. And maybe this is just, maybe I'm just dead wrong on this. I could be wrong. I feel like it's more likely that Alabama beats UConn than Purdue beats NC State. Because Purdue, what are they going to do? They're going to throw a 6'7", 6'8" guy at Zach Edey, DJ Burns. He's great. But is that going to be enough? Alabama can go 17 of 27 from three, and all of a sudden, it's a, you know, they're up three with a minute to go. So I think it can absolutely happen. What else we got? I just saw you flash one up there. Also, Mr. Producer, could Bama UConn be a 100 or closer to an 80 type game? So Casey's asking, like, do I think it's going to be like 100 to 100 in that Bama UConn game? Again, I said it on Thursday's show. Remember, people were like, I said I thought Illinois could give them a game. By the way, apparently people were like, you deleted an Illinois tweet. I'm like, I don't think I did. I don't think I was hiding the fact that I thought that Illinois could potentially hang with UConn. But I'm telling you, that's the way you got to do it. You have to be able to hit three-pointers in volume, because UConn likes to shoot three, but, you know, they still work inside out with Donovan Clingan. I tend to think that UConn, I think Alabama can absolutely make it a game. I think Alabama's got to score 85-plus. I think if it's a 71-69 game, I don't think Alabama can win that style of game. But listen, we see how they play. You know, we saw it against North Carolina. They were never out of that game. Even when they fell down, even when whatever, they were never out of that game. I think they can absolutely win. Anything else before we get out of here? Christopher Wright, I have no idea why Kentucky fans got so mad at me when I said, why go after Hurley? Go after Nate Oates. The dude can coach. So Christopher Wright, if you remember, after Kentucky lost to Gonzaga, it was their third straight loss earlier in the year at home. I did a list of the coaches that, you know, whatever, should be candidates at Kentucky. I said, look, first call should be to Jay Wright. Call him, make sure he's not interested. But what I said at the time, go get Nate Oates. I said it. Nate Oates, first of all, Hurley, you know, UConn, I hate to say it, is basically every bit the job that Kentucky is. Great facilities, great resources, great money, great this. Listen, Hassan's talked about it when he's come on the show. Hassan Diar, the UConn guard, is like, he's talked about, we have masseuses, we have trainers, we have nutritionists. Like, it's a great job. Now, as the SEC separates financially, are you going to be able to pay your assistants more? Maybe. I know what the assistant coaches make at UConn. They ain't scraping together breadcrumbs and, you know, eating mayonnaise sandwiches there. They're getting paid pretty well. But Nate Oates, you know, I do think, I thought there was maybe a ceiling in Alabama, but now I don't know. First off, remember, he just signed that extension, so he ain't going anywhere. And you're in the SEC. You're going to have the money. I think you can do anything you want at Bama. I know Bama fans will say, build him a new arena. I think Nate Oates, I've been told, all he really cares about, make sure my NIL is in place, make sure my players are taken care of. The arena is not a big deal. But Nate Oates is a star. I'm telling you, man, the two guys I truly believe in my heart of hearts, Nate Oates and Dan Hurley. Dan Hurley's got to be number one because he's got the natty, because he's going to a back-to-back Final Four. But Nate Oates is number two. Bill Self is great, but he's 61, 62 years old. You know, Izzo's on the verge of retirement. You know, Matt Painter just made his first Final Four in year 18, 19. There's a void. And I think Oates and Hurley are one and two, and I would put Hurley, obviously, at number one. Last question. Do you have any predictions ranking-wise for 2024, 2025? I'll tell you this. I always put out my way too early top 25 the first week of, or right after the national championship game. All I will tell you very quickly, I think there's going to be a strong case for Alabama at number one. Because Alabama, they're losing Aaron Estrada. All those other guys are probably going to be back. Grant Nelson is not an NBA draft prospect. Mark Sears has more eligibility. He is not an NBA draft prospect. And on top of all that, they've already found a replacement for Estrada in the portal. They got a commitment. And then they have two McDonald's All-Americans coming in, Aiden Sherrill and Darian Reed, I believe is the kid's name. So you start talking about a team that has a ton of talent already with more coming in. I think Alabama might be number one. I'll be curious on some other schools. Duke has a great recruiting class. I really have to look at the rosters. I haven't done that yet. We will have a way too early top 25. By the way, after the national championship game, we'll make sure to talk about that as well. And also, by the way, I'll say this. It's going to change a million times between when the season ends and when the portal finishes up in May and June. Because as you know, the portal changes absolutely everything. Another team that I think will be really good is Arizona. But Arizona right now, Arizona's got like 3 5-stars coming in, plus a lot of good players coming back. The thing with Arizona is, you know, we just have a track record right now that they haven't been great in the tournament. They've lost 3 straight times to a team that's seeded higher than them. So we'll see what happens from there. Any last questions, Producer Matt, before we get out of here? All right, I'll tell you what. We have a great crowd here on a Friday night or Sunday night. Excuse me. It is 10:41 Pacific time. I do think it is time for me to get out of here. If you're not subscribed to the YouTube channel, do me a quick favor. Click that little subscribe button at the bottom of the screen. Tomorrow, we will do a portal update, and Hassan Diarra, UConn guard hero Hassan Diarra, will be joining us tomorrow night as well. So if you're not subscribed to the YouTube channel, please make sure to do so. Click that subscribe button, turn on notifications, all that good stuff. Also, if you're not subscribed to the podcast, please make sure to do so. Apple, Spotify, etc. Make sure you're following on social media at @Aaron_Torres on Twitter, at @AaronTorresPod on Instagram, AaronTorresPodcastQuestions@gmail.com, AaronTorresPodcastQuestions@gmail.com. I'll tell you what, I got to sign off social media for the rest of the day because half of my mentions are people that totally agree that people have no idea what to do with Zach Edey, and half of are Purdue fans telling me I'm an idiot. So it has been an adventurous day. To all of you who joined us live, truly appreciate your support. Make sure to subscribe. I think we'll be back for a full show on Wednesday. Really fun interview that I'm going to run later this week. But again, tomorrow, a portal update, Hassan Diarra. I will be back soon. Thank you so much for your support. By the way, leave a 5-star rating and review if you could on Apple as well. As a matter of fact, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to drop a little Apple link in this bad boy. If you guys or girls want to sign on to Apple, leave a few 5-star reviews. Got a couple angry Purdue fans that have left some not so nice messages. So leave a 5-star rating and review there. But I do think that is really it. Shout out to Torrent Craig. Shout out to Rachel, who hates my voice. Shout out to JJ Redick, you F-head, unblock me, bro. Shout out to all the Purdue fans. We will lock arms and sing Kumbaya this week in Phoenix. Be back tomorrow. More College Hoops, people.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special mom in your life. And what better way than with the Osea's limited edition skincare sets featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has 2 limited edition sets that are perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their advanced eye care duo brightens, awakens, and firms the skin around your eyes, while the Golden Glow Body Trio nourishes and smooths the skin all over. Both sets are packaged in giftable boxes. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. And the best part? For a limited time, you can save up to $46 on Osea's sets. Plus, get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. This Mother's Day, get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. Go to OSEAMalibu.com and use code MOM for 10% off site-wide.